Thank you for joining us for Faith and Family. Today's program is pre-recorded, so the listener lines will not be open. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy the program. Good morning and welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Monday, November 11th, Veterans Day. We're kicking off a great week in honor of our veterans. We're going to be speaking with veterans throughout the week. Today, we're going to start off the day talking with veteran Lieutenant Colonel Dave Morris and his wife, Erica. We're going to talk about family life while being deployed. What is it like to serve? He served in the Michigan Air National Guard. So looking forward to talking with him and Erica here in just a little bit on Faith and Family. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website. Go to KFUO.org, look for the logo in the sponsor section, click on that, and that'll tell you all about Concordia University, Wisconsin, and the programs they have to offer, and the locations where Concordia University, Wisconsin is available. Joining us by phone this morning, we have Lieutenant Colonel Dave Morris joining us, and not at home today, out and about serving and working. Thanks for joining us this morning, Lieutenant.
Hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Dave. Thanks for joining us. This is Faith and Family. Can you hear us okay?
I hear you fine.
Wonderful.
I just didn't know if you were talking to me yet.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate you spending some time. And we also have with us on the phone, Erica. Good morning, Erica.
Good morning.
Thanks for spending some time with us. Now, I understand that, that Dave, you served in the Michigan Air National Guard and are now retired. When did you serve?
I served from 1985 till 2006.
It's quite a career and a lot of activity during that time.
Yeah, I was a busy guy. You know, the war on terror made it a growth industry.
I'm sure it kept you quite busy. And Erica, how long have you all been married?
22 years.
So that career was during, you know, is during your marriage. How about which came first? I didn't do the math here. Which came first, the military career or the wedding?
The career came first, and then the wedding. Although I knew Erica probably 2 years before I joined, and then 6 years after I joined, we got married.
And so, Erica, how did you meet Dave?
We met at college when we were freshmen.
And where were you studying, and what were you studying at the time?
We were at Ferris, it was called Ferris State College at the time, now it's Ferris State University, and I was studying accounting, and Dave was a biology major eventually.
You say eventually, sounds like there's a story behind that.
Well, when he was a freshman, he was going to be a dentist, which is about as far from flying as you can get.
So Dave, what drew you to a career in the military?
Well, I always knew I wanted to fly, I guess, but I was temporarily lured away to be a dentist because I saw how much a dentist makes. And about halfway through, my best friend, who was my best man at the wedding, sat me down and said, "It's obvious you don't like biology. What do you want to do?" And I said, "I want to fly." And he goes, "Then do it." And this guy never told me to do anything, but when he did, he was always right. So I called a bunch of flying schools, and they all started out with, "If you can't join the military, we're the best school out there." And after about the sixth time, I got the hint, "Hey, maybe I should call the military and see what they can do or I can do," and the rest is history.
And so you got connected with the Michigan Air National Guard.
Yeah, I had an uncle that was in the Michigan Air National Guard at Selfridge, just north of Detroit. And I called them, and they sent me to Battle Creek, Michigan, which has another guard unit at the time, or still does. But I enlisted there as a ground forward air controller, where you work with the Army and you call in airstrikes for the good guys against the bad guys. And then eventually they sent me to pilot training in 1989. Got my wings and got checked out in the A-37 for about 9 months, and then they sent me to A-10 school, and I flew that the last 16 years.
Wow. So you've flown, what types of aircrafts have you flown?
I've done some civilian flying, you know, some tail dragger airplanes, some light aircraft, and then I flew the T-37, which is a trainer, and the T-38, which is a supersonic trainer, then the A-37, A-10, and now I fly 737s.
So you're still flying today?
Yeah, that's why I'm in Albuquerque. I'm on a trip, actually.
Wow. And now you're retired, but you're flying commercial?
Yes, I'm a commercial airline pilot for Southwest Airlines.
Aha. Wonderful. So you're still using those skills that you gained in the military for your day-to-day career?
Yep. Yep. Still using that to put the bread on the table.
So, Erica, I'm curious, did you know what you were getting into then as you all were approaching marriage? Did you know what a military life ahead of you looked like?
It was a learning experience. I did not grow up in a military family, so Dave got back just a couple days before we got married for the ceremony.
Oh, wow.
From training somewhere. And we learned to, that's what it was going to be like. And sometimes we didn't have Thanksgiving on Thanksgiving Day because they were deploying, right before Thanksgiving. So we'd have it, on Tuesday, and then off he would go for 3 months or, something at a time.
So there were, it certainly would bring about challenges. It wasn't the lifestyle that you grew up with in terms of family life. It was certainly something different. As a child and as a teen, what were family traditions like for you?
Well, my dad worked outside the home. My mom had a job where she could work within the home, but my dad never traveled like Dave has. He was home every night, and we had a very traditional family. There were four children and, a pretty Leave It to Beaver kind of household.
So you're used to having, parents home on a regular basis and holidays together and not missing a parent with lots of travel. So this was a big change for you then.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, how about you? What was family life for you growing up like?
I didn't grow up in a military, I'm not a military brat, but my grandfather and my uncle, two of my uncles were in the service. My dad owned a drugstore, so it was kind of, the tradition was everybody would work at the drugstore on Christmas Eve, and then we would go to my dad's mom's house for Christmas on Christmas Eve night. In the morning we'd wake up and have presents, Santa and all that, and then we would go to my mom's parents with all the aunts and uncles and cousins on Christmas Day, and that was kind of the tradition. And not quite as Ozzie and Harriet as Erica is, but pretty close.
So you had a lot of family traditions, and family life wasn't upset as what we might say, military life might have created.
Yeah, and Erica understates a little bit, which I love about her. And after, I got home 2 days before the wedding, we went on the honeymoon, and on the last day of the honeymoon, I went back for more training, and she went home. So it was a real, that's what's good about Erica, though. She rolls with all of that.
And looking back on your years in the military, what does it take for a couple to stay together faithfully to stay together and to live out a faithful married life with military life?
Well, for us, it's trust. And absolutely, bottom line has to be trust, because we're both going to be apart for long periods of time, unsupervised, if you will, where we could each do whatever we wanted without the other one even knowing it. But And we talked about this a lot before we got married, and it wasn't really a question. It wasn't like, well, okay, I'll trust you if you trust me. I mean, we trust each other anyway. But we talked about how it's a pillar of our relationship. So when I go on the road, and if it's for 3 days or 3 months, I never worry about Erica screwing around or doing things that we as a family haven't set as a goal or discussed. And by the same token, and she'll have to answer to this, she should not ever have to worry about me. And I've never given her cause to worry. She could follow me on any trip, and she would still not have any cause to worry. And because I want her to trust me and not sleep, and be able to sleep at night knowing I'm on the road and not screwing around and doing things. So we trust each other implicitly.
Trust is a key part. Erica, your thoughts on what it takes for a couple to be faithful through a military career?
I knew Jade would say trust right away, and I absolutely agree with that. And I think it helps to be surrounded by people that share those values. When Dave was deployed somewhere, I didn't have a girlfriend tugging my shoulder saying, come on, let's go out and, play while the guys are away, or, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I think the people you surround yourself with are really important, too, to help facilitate what we've already discussed, for our relationship.
I want to talk about being deployed. What were some of your deployments, Dave?
Well, I've been, there's lots of training deployments, a week or two here and there, but I've been to 4 different combat deployments with Kosovo, Iraq twice, and Afghanistan once. And those were a little bit lengthier. I think the longest one was like, and Erica knows the math better than I do, was it 5 out of 6 months or something like that?
I knew the math better.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Well, that's okay. Let's go back to your first deployment where it looks like you said certainly there was some deployment for training. What about when you were deployed, not necessarily for training, but going to serve overseas? What was that like, Erica? What was that like when he was packing up and ready to leave? What were the things the questions that you had?
Oh, gosh. That was very hard and emotional because I would try to be strong for him. And he would already start detaching himself from, emotionally, from me, from the household, because he had a mission to accomplish, and his brain would start working on that mission. The first time he left was the hardest. I think it got easier each time. But the first time I was really fearful of his life. And I went to church the first time, and I just had this feeling of calm come over me that he would be fine. And so I really just had to ride out the time then. And friends and family helped with that, as well as one of the longest deployments he was on. I volunteered a lot, and that really helped. Just, to stay busy helping somebody else is therapy for me and what I was going through at that time.
And you said you had friends and family. What family did you have around you?
We don't live right near family. So I would visit family more often, and the other wives, the people at the base become another family. Mm-hmm. And so the wives would try and schedule something when all of the guys were deployed, to meet for dinner or to get together and support one another and become another type of family. Now, if Dave was just on a train deployment by himself, that didn't always happen. They're busy with their families, and it's easier to get lost in the shuffle. But when the whole base was deployed, it was a very strong support group at the base.
And I appreciate how you pointed out earlier that having the family, the friends, the family of the fellow wives on the base, not necessarily like you said, a girlfriend tugging at you saying, hey, let's go out let's go out to the bars and pretend that live like we don't necessarily have husbands, but instead having that support and surrounding yourself with people who have who share those values, who understood what it's like to be a wife and serving in that capacity, to live out your faithful calling as a wife and to be together with families.
Sure. Yes.
Now you mentioned children. The other wives had children. Did your family also have children?
We do now. We did not then.
Aha. Uh-huh. So how many children are, how has the Lord blessed you with children?
We have two children now, two little girls.
And we mean little, 1 and 2 years old.
Oh my. Well, our household has a 2 month old, so.
Oh, good for you.
So I can relate. And now I'm sure your schedule is still quite busy compared to what it was when you were serving in the military. I can imagine having little ones in the house and still trying to keep up with a commercial pilot's schedule is challenging.
Well, it's really a great job, and it's a great company. When we adopted both these girls, but both times when we adopted them, they gave me 3 weeks off to stay home with them and get things, get the bonding process and the routine rolling. And now Erica is just as strong as she's ever been with, when I'm gone for 3 days, she takes care of the babies and, fills the house with food and fixes the meals and changes the diapers and reads the books and does all the loving and gets all the hugs and kisses. I'm jealous about that part. And then when I come home, I try not to overstep. I try not to change the routines.
Mm-hmm.
And try and keep them on their schedule, which that's the military part of me, because when she lays down a schedule, I make sure it happens. There's no flexibility.
And that's, I think, as you pointed out, that's a military part of you. That's something that you gained from your service in the military that you can carry on and use in life, the rest of your life.
That and working for my dad.
Yeah.
I mean, my dad and I are very close, but working for him, I learned a lot about, what it takes to make things happen and, your responsibilities and work ethic and things like that. It all carried together.
How did working for your dad impact your choice to go into the military and then your work and your ethic and service in the military?
Well, as far as going in the military, he actually wasn't a big fan of it in the beginning, because in high school I tried to go to a ROTC scholarship and fly with the Navy, and he kind of talked me out of it. And then in that discussion with my buddy that I talked about previously about flying, I talked to my dad about it again, because, again, we're very close. He wouldn't stop me this time, but he kind of followed along to make sure that I wasn't being led down the wrong path by some recruiter, or that my decisions were still smart. And now he's as proud a father as anybody could be about my career, and he was then too. He just wanted to make sure I was doing it right. So in that regard, I guess I learned that once I get focused on something, I still kind of have to look around and make sure I'm not missing anything. And that goes for working for him and working for the military or trying to pursue any goal,
Mm-hmm.
And I like my job, so I like to do it a lot. And every now and then Erica will say, why don't you stay home? You don't need to pick up any extra. And that kind of reminds me of, brings me back to dead center again about what's important.
And how has your military career, you mentioned, the sticking to the schedule and not changing the routine when you come home, other things from your military career that now impact your life?
Oh, I'm sure it does in tons of ways that I probably don't even recognize anymore. That might be a better question for Erica.
Well, some of your friendships will be lifelong friendships from the military.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the nice things, I guess, is one of my Well, I'm leaving in 2 days to go hunting, and all those guys are friends I served with. And then there are friends that I've had from, you know, like my first day at pilot training that I still talk to now, and he comes to the house every couple of years, you know, and we can go for 2 or 3 years without talking, but when we meet, we pick up right where we left off. There's no gap. There's no awkwardness trying to catch up.
And I think that that's pretty common among military, you build these really strong bonds, and I'm sure that happens when you're serving side by side, fighting for something you believe in so strongly, and fighting for your life too. You know, fighting for your life and for the lives of others, you build this strong bond.
Yeah, you know, when your life could be ended by lead poisoning any day, you share a lot with people that you probably wouldn't normally, and you build that bond.
Certainly. In just a little bit, in a couple of minutes, we need to take a break. After that break, I want to hear if you have some stories. I know you were a fighter pilot, and would love to hear some of your stories about that. I know you have great relationships with the folks you served with, but would love to hear about some of those stories as well.
Okay.
But before we go to break, as you were as you were going through training, what was going through your mind about what, as you were preparing for going through training and preparing to, you know, to go serve on a mission, what was going through your mind as you were thinking about your wife being back home?
You know, most of the time I felt very sorry for her because I was busy and focused on a mission, and that kept my mind off of what she might be going through. But I felt sorry for her because she would have more downtime, and I think that's when she would worry about me. And, you know, I don't want her to worry. I've got the best training in the world. I've got the best God ever. There's, you know, everything is going to work out. But doubts creep into one's mind sometimes. So I felt sorry for her that she couldn't be as busy sometimes, or as, you know, be able to focus on one thing like I was and have to think about it. But, you know, and this is going to sound like false bravado, but it's not. I was a very good fighter pilot. I had very good people surrounding me, so I wasn't in a lot of fear of what's going on there. I was doing my job, and I was doing it as best as I could. But thinking about Erica sitting home worrying about me every day, that just made me feel sorry for her, because she didn't need to worry, but there's no way you can tell her not to.
Sure. And Erica, you said there were times when you took on opportunities to volunteer. Were you doing anything else at that time besides volunteering? Were in school or working or anything, any other opportunities that came your way?
Yes. Before we adopted the girls, I worked full time. So I always had a full-time job. One day was gone, but that left the weekends. And, you know, when you're married, that's your person that you do everything with, your social life. And when he is just suddenly gone, that's where my friends and the volunteering really stepped in and kept my mind off of missing Dave.
I think Dawn was a big help then, too, wasn't she?
Your sister, yes. Mm-hmm.
So having family around certainly helped. Those opportunities to volunteer and serve, and it is so true. When you miss someone, or just in order to get your mind off of self, mm-hmm. serving others can be a great way to help with that.
Yes.
Well, today we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Morris and his wife Erica, who Dave served in the Michigan Air National Guard and is now retired but serving as a commercial pilot. We're going to continue talking with them and hear some stories from our fighter pilot friend when we come back from this break, right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Thank you. Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Governor Paul LePage of Maine comes from a very personal place when he speaks out against abortion and violence against women. He was the oldest of 18 children and had a father who routinely beat his mother while pregnant. If the kids stood up for mom, they too got it. When Governor LePage was 10 years old, his dad brutally beat his 7-month pregnant mother, which caused a stillbirth days later. Little Marie died, but by the grace of God, the other children survived in the womb while their mother suffered the beatings. Now the governor's an outspoken opponent of abortion and violence against women. The recent news about the football player knocking his fiancée unconscious caused him to boycott NFL games until the assailant is permanently kicked out of football.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
KFUO, the messenger of good news. And Jesus said, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born of the water and the Spirit, he cannot enter the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit." KFUO, the message is clear.
Babies are born with very small amounts of vitamin K, a vital nutrient their bodies need for blood to clot. Vitamin K deficiency bleeding, or VKDB, is a condition that occurs when a baby doesn't have enough vitamin K. The good news is, just one dose protects your baby from dangerous bleeding. The American Academy of Pediatrics has recommended vitamin K for all newborns since 1961. Don't take a chance. Plan for your baby to receive the recommended dose.
A message from the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services.
Philip ran to the Ethiopian and heard him reading Isaiah the prophet and asked, "Do you understand what you are reading?" And he said, "How can I unless someone guides me?" Like the Ethiopian eunuch, there are millions of people around the world who want to understand what the Bible says, but they need someone to guide them. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation translates books like Luther's Small Catechism, which opens Scripture's meaning. Help introduce people to the Savior. LHFmissions.org.
Have you ever missed a live broadcast of one of your favorite KFUO programs? Well, let me propose a convenient solution for you. Visit the KFUO website, kfuo.org, and download your favorite program by way of podcast to your iPhone or other smart device. It's easy, it's simple, it's convenient, and you'll never miss another program. KFUO, the official voice of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the messenger of good news by way of radio, web, and podcast.
Reverend Dr. Matthew C. Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod recently said these words regarding the importance of the work of Concordia Historical Institute.
"When you forget your past, you forget the gospel. You become locked into your own little part of time. As you study the past and know the past and know what happened in the past, you see God at work. And you see Christ."
Discover your Lutheran history at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
In 1924, we embraced the new technology of that day, radio. Since that day, we've stayed on the cutting edge of technology. There are many easy ways to listen to worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand. We proclaim the gospel of Christ in both word and song. Now that's why you should listen. The where and the how, well, that's up to you. The messenger of good news, worldwide KFUO.
Thank you for joining us for Faith and Family. Today's program is pre-recorded, so the listener lines will not be open. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy the program. Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Good to be with you this Monday, November 11th, Veterans Day. Today we are talking with Lieutenant Colonel Dave and Erica Morris, who are sharing their story of married life during deployment. Dave served as a fighter pilot in the Michigan Air National Guard. And Dave, before we went to break, I mentioned that I was looking forward to hearing some stories as a fighter pilot. Any interesting stories from your career that you'd like to share?
Yeah, there's you know.
I'm sure a whole wealth of stories. Any that stand out? It's not every day I get to talk with a fighter pilot.
Well, at least not that you know. you know, I had a bunch of missions. I can't remember exactly how many combat missions I have. I think it's in the high 30s, maybe 100 or so combat hours. Actually, probably more like 200 combat hours, I guess. I don't know. It's one of those things that I knew then and I can't remember now, but most of the action I saw was in Kosovo and Iraq. Kosovo was 99, the summer 99 over there, all those people fighting each other, and we were basically trying to end it for them. And I ended up flying a lot of night missions with night vision goggles. And as good as they are, it's impossible to find a tank in the trees at night with no moon on night vision goggles. So what we would do is turn all the lights on the airplane in the combat zone until somebody started shooting at us, and then we'd turn off the lights and go shoot back. So we were kind of our own bait.
Wow.
Bait and switch, if you will. And had a couple missiles go flying by the airplane doing that, which, you know, to paraphrase Winston Churchill, you're never more alive than when you're scared to death. So I was very alive.
And Erica, when you heard these stories, what did you think?
I didn't hear them until he was home.
And I'm sure you were much happier about that.
He kind of kept a diary and said, here, read this, when he got home. And I got to that part and said, I thought you were just enforcing a no-fly zone and you weren't shooting and nobody was shooting at you. What do you mean?
I'm sure that was, on one hand, very terrifying to hear that or to read that, but then at the same time to know that that part was done, at least for that time being. He's home, yeah. Until the next time came up, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that prepared her, too, for other things that I would do that, you know, on the surface or to the average person, they seem kind of dumb, but the whole idea is to get the mission done and to do it in, you know, whatever manner it'll happen in.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I was on another mission in the northwest side of Baghdad with troops in contact. Our good guys were, you know, not eyeball to eyeball, but pretty close to Iraqi forces fighting. And that's probably the most fulfilling thing I ever did as a fighter pilot was actually, you know, you got a guy screaming on a radio so loud I can't even understand him, trying to figure out where the front of the good guys are and the front of the bad guys are so that I can come in and take care of the bad guys. And, you know, finally we get it all worked out and it ended up like shooting fish in a barrel almost, but still stayed in the target area too long, used up too much gas, you know, squeaking it. Thanking God for 30 knots of tailwind so I can get all the way back to the base. Wrong direction, you know, other airplanes going by, climbing over the city. And, you know, we'd fly around Baghdad. But you know, when Erica hears about that now, she goes, well, after what you did in Kosovo, that doesn't surprise me.
So now that you fly a commercial aircraft, do you ever... Do you ever wish you were back in your military career?
No, not too much. Only because I've done everything I can do or wanted to do in the A-10. And, you know, as fulfilling and as fun as that whole job was, I've done all that, you know. Now it's time to move on to something else. And this job has its own rewards, too, in a different way. You know, I mean, I get to take people to their loved ones all over the country all the time or to business meetings and stuff like that. And I really enjoy, I like the fact that I'm doing that. And I'm, you know, I'm gone for 3 or 4 days every week, but then I'm home straight for 3 or 4 days. And, you know, all that time is my own with my wife and my girls.
Erica, is there anything about military life that you miss?
Probably the camaraderie, because Dave does go off and fly, and so He has friends at work that he tells me about, but for the most part, I don't meet them. I don't know them. We don't have a social life with the people like we did in the military.
With the people at this job.
Sure, yeah. It's not really the type of job where the people you work with are your next-door neighbors on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm, right.
You're not living on a base with the family members of these people that he works with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. That's funny because I thought she'd say the travel.
That was fun too.
Where did you get to travel?
I traveled to Europe. I've traveled to Tucson, to Mississippi.
Wake Island.
Dave was stationed in Mississippi for a year, so I traveled to Mississippi a lot. Kansas, all over.
So all over the globe. That's nice.
Wake Island.
Yeah. Florida.
Yeah, it was nice. She would come meet me somewhere, and, you know, if I knew I was going to get 2 or 3 days off in a row, or, you know, like Italy, we worked it out so that I'd deploy, and then we'd stay after a couple of weeks, and we'd travel around Germany and Austria and Italy and Switzerland, and just had a ball.
So it's nice to have some of those perks. I'm sure it doesn't make up for all the time that you're apart, but I'm sure it was nice to get to have those things that not everybody else, you know, gets to enjoy.
Yeah, it was. It was really nice because, I mean, obviously I got my transportation paid for, so we're only paying for one, and I can scout out a little bit sometimes, you know, good places for us to go, and a lot of times we just explore on our own, you know.
Certainly.
I'll tell you, this is if you got a minute, the one real fun story that I always remember is when we were in Italy one time on a deployment. We're up in the foothills of the Alps, and there was a road going down the backside of this mountain. We were staying on the top of this mountain. An old guy that ran the hotel, Mr. C, told us about this town down there. So we got this little, tiny little car we rented. And we're driving down the backside in January, I think, or December, and the ruts are so deep that I don't even have to hold on to the steering wheel on this winding road. It just steers us back and forth and back and forth. And we just kept going and going and going, and we kept saying to each other, we'll go around this one more turn, and it'd be pretty. And we go, well, let's go this one more turn. And finally, after like 45 minutes or an hour, we come to this most beautiful Italian village on a big reservoir, and the water is green, like an emerald green. It's just beautiful. And the name of the town is Barchus. And so now when Eric and I go out exploring and we find something really cool, we look at each other and we say, the road to Barchus.
How nice.
Oh, when we're making a decision, should we go on or should we turn back? Road to Barchus, and we go on.
It's nice, I'm sure, to have those types of moments together, and to have that strong bond that's built over the years of marriage that the Lord has blessed you with. Today, we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Morris and his wife, Erica, about married life while serving in the military and being deployed. Earlier, you mentioned, Erica, you know, when it was around the time of Dave's first deployment that you went to church some of the feelings you had at that time. Did you have support from your congregation? Did you have much of a connection from other members in the congregation to support you during that time?
Oh, yes. They were always asking about Dave. One lady said, I think it was Easter time that Dave was gone, and she said, oh, where are you? Know, you have family for Easter, don't you? And I said, well, no, I don't have family around here. And she said, well, I'm going to adopt you. She did. And there was another man that every Sunday almost he asked me, do you need anything? Is there anything you need at your house? And, you know, do you need any work done? And so just a lot of support from the congregation. Very, very nice people.
Dave, how about you for while serving in the military? Easy access to chaplain and services?
Did Kurt put you up to this question?
Yeah, actually, one of my very good friends is Chaplain Kurt Taylor, who just made lieutenant colonel himself. And I don't think I can't remember exactly when he joined the unit, but I know when he was introduced as an LCMS chaplain, I went right to him and we started talking, and we've gotten along famously ever since then. But yeah, I've picked his brain a bunch, you know, if something was on my mind or I just needed a sounding board, and he was always great to have around. And still today, we still talk. He's one of those military friends I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Easter Sunday in the desert under a tent with a Navy chaplain. I mean, this guy was like 7 feet tall, a full colonel in the equivalent rank, giving this great, great service, you know. And they're always there and always great to have.
It's so important, I'm sure, to have that support to be reminded of the gifts of God and to be delivered the gifts of God, especially when you're serving in such a capacity.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I want to say too is, as a fighter pilot, I've got a whole different life and a whole lot easier than those guys, you know, slinging rifles over their shoulders and out there in the desert trying to get to a chaplain or a, you know, their buddies and things like that. But, I mean, we're all brothers in arms, but it's a lot easier life for me than what those guys had. And I'm thankful for those guys out there, too.
And this is certainly while this is Veterans Day and we're remembering our veterans and giving thanks for them, it's an everyday thing. I'm sure the perspective, your perspective is going to be different than, you know, those of us civilians who haven't had that perspective. But what can we do as Americans, even in other countries, what can the civilians do to truly show support and appreciation and thanks for those who serve in military, especially who are deployed out on missions, who are risking their lives on a daily basis?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I know for me, I'm very appreciative of a handshake and a thank you. You know, I don't need a lot. None of us, or at least the guys I know, they don't want a lot. You know, they don't want a lot of people trying to give them stuff and do stuff. And you know, we all went in for our own various reasons, and we're all patriots that went in. You can't not be a patriot and do this job. So I would say a thank you, you know, a handshake, take your hat off at the ball game when they're doing the national anthem, or put your hand over your heart, you know, show respect for the flag and the country. You know, those are the things that we fight for, and that's what we'd like to see, I guess.
Something as simple as a handshake.
I'll tell you, it's really neat. You know, I see a lot of young kids in the airport in uniform, and I don't shake all their hands, but I try and get to a majority of them, and just to shake their hand and tell them thanks, you know, they're kind of taken aback at first. They're not used to people telling them that, but I haven't had one yet say, don't do that to me.
I would imagine most of them appreciate it. My father is a veteran. He served in the Army National Guard, and one thing that he looks forward to every year is a local school in the area, an elementary school, hosts a special luncheon for the veterans. Any veteran in the area is welcome to join them for lunch, and they have a special presentation, music, and things like that. And then they have I believe they call it the Walk of Fame. The school, I think, is designed in kind of a square shape, and all the veterans walk down the halls, through the halls of the school, and all the classrooms come out and applaud all the veterans as they walk through and thank them for their work, for their service.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's pretty neat, and I know that my dad appreciates it, he gets together with friends and other family members who've served in the military, other family members who are veterans, and they attend this every year, and I know how much he appreciates it. Just, you know, every day thinking, what are things that we can do to show our appreciation and thanks? And I like what you said, Dave. Just merely a simple handshake and a simple thank you can really show appreciation. And most certainly showing respect for the work that you've done, the things that you stand to protect, the things that you stand to preserve for us. simply doing the vocation that God has given you to live, the vocation to protect, to serve in whatever way you're given. The ways that we can show support and thanks for that is, as you said, really quite simple quite often.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Erica, in light of all how has life changed now that Dave has served and retired from the military? How long have you been retired, Dave?
7 years, I think, going on 8 maybe.
So, Erica, how does life look different now that he's retired? What does life look like for you? I know that he's still working, but and you now have children in the picture. What things are different now that he's retired? Now that he's a veteran?
He does leave almost every week, but it's not for months at a time. So there's always a light quickly at the end of the tunnel. Occasionally he does, he's asked to do talks or give speeches as a veteran, and that's really nice. We've attended those.
For the family of those who are currently deployed, especially for wives, spouses of those who are deployed, what can the rest of us do to support them, whether it be in our congregations or our neighbors? What was important to you, and what can we do to support the families of our military?
I think just ask them what they need. If I would have had the girls, I think somebody offering to babysit would have been really nice. I know at our base they had people willing to come in with skill sets. If the person deployed handled all the money and the person that's left at home is struggling with the money or the taxes or, you know, anything like that, they were people that would come in and help the person at home through until the person that usually did that was back. Because I say the person because, you know, male or female, sometimes the females handle all the money, and mm-hmm. if they got deployed, you got a guy at home trying to figure it out, or vice versa. If the husband was always handling the money and the bills and doing the taxes, and the wife is at home and doesn't know how to do that, the taxes are still due. And just, you know, offering common sense things like that. What does, you know, calling a local base, does anybody that needs help with having their leaves raked at this time of year or anything like that?
What advice, Erica, do you have for new military families who find themselves struggling with adjusting to military life as a spouse?
I think look around, because there's probably somebody else also in the same boat. And as well as to search out a church and look for the support there. There are people around that are willing to help in those traditional helping places, a church or within the base. There's usually somebody there that is set to do that, and I can match you up with somebody that's in a similar situation, and that you can provide support to each other. But you know, at my church, my family, and certainly the internet now makes things much easier than it was when people were in Vietnam or other, you know, earlier conflicts, where they would go weeks, months without hearing from their loved ones. And the internet is wonderful, and as well lets people stay in touch with their families when they're not right in the same hometown, to Skype or to just call.
Sure, it's amazing how technology allows us to stay in touch better today. Mm-hmm. Dave, can you give us an example of one of the most trying times in your military career, especially for your family, perhaps a time when you even wanted to give up?
Well, give up is not my vocabulary, so I can't help you there. But there are two most trying times that actually happened at home before deployments. And one was we just moved into a new house in June, and I volunteered to deploy to a combat zone that was going to keep me gone over, I think I was leaving Thanksgiving Day, and then I was going to be gone Christmas and New Year's and come back like the week after the New Year started. And Erica was very upset with me. She was really upset the fact that I was going to be gone, but it was like tenfold when she found out I volunteered, because it's our new house, you know, first single house, you know, single dwelling house. And so that was tough to try to explain to her that this is what I do, and this is my chance to try and put into play what I've practiced.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really hard. But she, being the Proverbs 31 woman that she is, you know, understood after, you know, time, understood who I was and what I was going to do and what I want to do, and then got behind me all the way. And the same thing happened again, I think, in another deployment. It was kind of the same deal, you know. You volunteered. Yeah, this is what I do, you know. And so there were kind of two episodes like that were really tough, but I don't think I was, as selfish as it is, I don't think I was ever going to give up.
Erica, what were your thoughts when he volunteered for deployment?
Well, I got to tell you a funny story. Before we were married, and he was talking about volunteering for something, and he said, but I'll tell you this. He was talking about, you know, that this was his job and what he needed to do, and he said, but I won't leave a single man. And I thought he meant he's going to go over there and do his job and just, you know, take out anything in his way and plod through. And I thought he was still talking about his service. He meant he would marry me before he left. So we had this misunderstanding that he thought he had told me he was going to marry me before he, even though we were planning this big wedding, and I thought it wasn't going to happen because he was volunteering for something. And so that was just kind of a funny misunderstanding that was funny afterwards.
That is pretty funny. Won't leave a single man. You thought he was going with it. The strong intention is not leaving anything left behind. And that was really a proposal.
Yeah. Of course, yes.
There's more to that than you know, but we don't have enough time for that.
What were your thoughts as he volunteered for deployment?
Selfish. I just didn't want him to volunteer and leave. I wanted him to, you know, let somebody else do that, but
sure,
that's not his nature.
Yeah. What were, with about just a few seconds left, what were your joys, each of you, just in a couple of words, what were your joys for during your time in the military? Dave?
Every single road to Barches.
Erica?
I loved the homecomings, when everybody would get off the plane and just, you know, I was looking through the crowd trying to find Dave, but I would see somebody else there that I was so happy to see again and just hug them and to be there. Even I would go and support if Dave wasn't coming home, but somebody, you know, a wave of people from his base were coming home, just to go there and hold the hand of a wife that knew her husband was going to get off that plane soon. That was just fantastic.
Homecomings. Thanks so much for talking with us today. We've been talking with Lieutenant Colonel Dave Morris and his wife, Erica. Thanks for spending some time with us on Faith and Family today.
Thanks for having us.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program.
Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.